Greetings and welcome to the inaugural podcast of what should be and will be aptly known as the FBL Dilemmas of an Addict. So I don't mind that title. I think it's a good tag. I think it fits pretty nicely. So I think that's what we will go with. So my name's William, and I'll be the primary host of this pod. As the pod evolves and progresses, I'll probably get some guests to come in from the addicts community. People that are interested in FPL and might provide some further insight on top of what I'll be providing on this pod. So this idea, it's been in the pipe works for a few weeks. I have an extended interest in football, Fantasy Premier League, and statistical analysis within the football domain. This particular show, we'll combine these elements, and I'll endeavour to provide insight on the FPL game that you might not find anywhere else. So, this show, it's simply broadcasted, to provide insight into primarily the structure of the program. So this being the first show, I think this is a good starting point for any program. In this show, I'll also give ideas on some early cheap defensive rotations that I quite like, and some things that might randomly pop up concerning the football landscape at the moment. I might talk about some of the new signings this show, I might not, and maybe a few players that I don't mind to look up for the upcoming FPL season, but primarily this initial show will concern the structure of the upcoming shows, the generic structure of the upcoming shows. I think that's a good starting point. This podcast serial will be in association with the Addict umbrella. I think the main Addicts community relates to Supercoach, the rugby league game, and then they have various little mini communities under the umbrella, and this one pertains to football, soccer. There's good stuff happening in the community. I think I'd like to see a little bit more in the FPL Addicts community, so I thought I'd start this podcast and provide some more things to make the mini league competitions even stronger, because I think it is quite strong. The guy that came first in the Addicts mini league finished with a really impressive overall ranking. So that's good. That's a good start. Anyway, so a bit of background on myself. I have degrees in journalism and education. I currently teach in the classroom and I enjoy it. I'm a relatively experienced FPL player, if I say so myself. I'm not that good. I had a really bad finish last season, so that brought me back down to earth a little bit. I have a career best finish of an overall ranking of 34th. That was the 2012-13 season, I think. Yeah, it was. I think Van Persie was bought and United bought the title. I think that was the season. I can't remember. Pretty sure it was. As I said, the season that just concluded was my worst for a little while. I finished around 12,000th, which is probably just a pass, but by my standards, it wasn't a fantastic finish. That was the first season I'd finished outside the top 7,000 for a few seasons. So, a bit disappointing, but whatever. I'll pick myself up off the floor and wipe away the blood, sweat and tears and have another crack, and hopefully I'd perform a little better this season. So anyway, let's get on to the structure of my desired structure for the pod. So the first part, so at the start of each program, we'll do a quick little chat, have a quick little discussion about some things that's going on, and then we'll get stuck straight into the structure. So the first thing that we'll talk about in every show is, it's called, the segment's called, he's just scored a sick round and he's scored a shed load of points, should you bring him in or not? So this segment's going to look at the biggest scorers, and then the other people that might be on the pod will determine whether they're worth considering bringing in or not. I'll discuss something like someone, just an example, Keeve, say that a deep lying midfielder from Swansea Key, and he might score a goal, and you might go, oh, hang on, awesome, I want to bring him in because he got a goal and he got 3 bonus points. So yeah, I think he's worth bringing in. So it's a bit of a knee jerk because, for example, you might look at the previous 6 rounds and he's only had 2 shots on goal and they've been outside the box. So if you in the stats and you're familiar with some of the context of him, you probably shouldn't bring him in. And that's the difference between the sheep mentality and being a knowledgeable FPL player. And you'll know that he probably isn't worth bringing in. I mean, this is a pretty rudimentary example for this segment, but it's just a good basic example for you to get an idea of what this segment's all about. There will be instances where there'll be a pretty fairly complex justification, whether it be like objective with numbers or more subjective with opinion and some other things. Some of the concepts that I'll consider when casting these players off or potentially trading them in will be fixtures, whether the statistics are sustainable, obviously price, nailed onness, whether a player will be rotated or not. So yes, that's the first segment. I'll just repeat that. The first segment's called "He's Just Scored a Sick Round and Scored a Shed Load of Points. Should You Bring Him In or Not?" I probably could make the title of that segment a little bit more precise, but I'm not going to. I think the long titles for the segments would be a bit of a gimmick for this pod. It's a bit, I don't know, a bit of fun. Okay, so on to the next segment, and I like this one. This segment's pretty similar to the previous segment, but it is different. So yeah, this segment's called "Everyone is Getting Him In, Should You Bring Him In or Not?" So this segment will look at the number of times a player is traded in after the game week. So we'll look at the actual numbers of people or fantasy managers trading him in, and then we'll assess these the top players brought in and determine whether the bandwagon makes sense or not. This will relate to the previous topic somewhat, but there'll be some probably even more outliers for the sheep mentality. A likely scenario here will be a player gets some points, but then the next few game weeks are horrible for that player, whether that be a rescheduled game week or difficult fixtures. And so you probably shouldn't bring him in, but the sheep are bringing him in because he's just scored a big game week. And as I said, it's quite similar to the previous segment. And this one might eventually swim in with the previous one because they're so similar. But I'm just going to give it a go because for me, they're quite different things. So we'll see. We'll probably end up finding that. I'll just be repeating myself in that second segment. Okay, so that second segment's called "Everyone is Getting Him In, Should You Bring Him In or Not?" Cool. So I'll transition into the third segment. "Everyone already has this player. Should you bring him in or not?" This is probably the segment that I'll be most interested in, and probably the one that I'll invest the most, or channel the most mental capacity into. This is all about the highly owned players. All right. So this segment will look at the currently highly owned players and whether you should limit the damage by getting them in, or ignoring it, thinking that that the sheep are doing the wrong thing. I mean, because it's all well and good, you know, to jump on differentials, but you know, if you keep missing out on these points from these highly owned players, then you aren't going to rise in overall rank. You're going to plummet. So I'll be incorporating a lot of statistical analysis into this segment. I'll be looking at player shot volume and goal scoring accuracy as well. So there'll be a lot of talk, this player's a five shot a game player per 90. This player's riding an unsustainable goal conversion rate, those kinds of things. I'll probably mention the word regression quite a bit and unsustainable stats as well. It's generally believed that the best predictor for future performance is shot volume as opposed to shot clinicalness. I mean, some players are so skilled that they're going to keep up their goal scoring conversion. Like, I think Benteke usually goes on extended periods where he maintains a really high goal conversion rate, and then I think last season when he came back from injury, his goal conversion, he was still only taking like, you know, 3-point-something shots a game, and his conversion rate was really low. All of a sudden, it just sparked, and he went on like a 10-game week run, and he rode his goal conversion rate quite high. And I mean, some players are skilled in that respect, but you've really got to sort of look at the context of the player. What kind of chances is he taking? Is he taking his shots inside the box? Are his shots coming from crosses? What's he doing? So we're going to look at stuff like that in this segment. So all these things, I'll talk about some of the predictor models getting around as well, especially the expected goals models from the particular amateur statistical analytics bloggers. I quite like Michael Cayley's, he's an amateur bloggist. I quite like his expected goals models. And I might save that discussion a little bit more for another pod. We'll look at some teams that sort of underperformed and overperformed in terms of expected goals. Well, I'll let you in now. Swansea posted unsustainable statistics last season, and it wouldn't surprise me if they regress significantly this season. So anyway, that's just between you and me. Anyway, cool. So all these things will determine whether a player is underperforming or overperforming according to things like shot location, context of shots taken, type of shots taken. And as I said, this will probably be the most interesting part, segment of this show. I find this stuff really interesting. So, and yeah, then we'll work at whether these highly owned players are worth bringing in primarily for damage limitation. So a bit of an anecdote. I think it wasn't last season, the season before, when Yaya Toure and Ramsey exploded onto the FPL landscape, and these guys posted really unsustainable, what seemed like unsustainable statistics. Like, Toure was like a 1-point-something shot a game player, and whatever shot he took, he scored. Now, it was so annoying because I'm thinking, oh, I'm smarter than these sheep. I'm not going to get this guy in. I'm just going to keep holding it off. I'm not going to get him in. His price just rose, and it got to like game week 20-something. It's like, man, this guy, he just keeps scoring. Like, even he was, every free kick he took, and, you know, if you're familiar with, you know, the stats and stuff, you know that free kick, scoring from free kicks, it's not very common that you're going to score. So anyway, this guy would take a free kick and he'd score. So eventually I had to bring him in because damage limitation. I probably did it 10 weeks too late, but I eventually did it. And I looked at this highly owned player. His name was Toure, and I eventually brought him in. And I actually found that my rank, I started to stabilize. I hemorrhaged my rank, and then I started to go up again. And then I don't think Aaron Ramsey was the other one. I found that when he scored, and I didn't have him because, you know, I'm a stats dude. I'm pretty stubborn as well when it comes to these things. I didn't get him in, and then I think he got injured midway through the season around Christmas time. So I was kind of lucky there. I think at the time I had a choice. I either brought in Ramsey or I brought in Ozil, and I think I brought in Ozil because he was differential in comparison, and he was posting really good creativity stats, like something crazy. Like he was getting a key pass every 30 minutes, and like then he was getting like what do they call it? Not a key pass. What's the one? Just a big chance. That's right. He was getting a big chance every 60 minutes or something, which is pretty well. And he sets up a player, and the player is like one-on-one with the keeper, and there's a pretty good chance he's going to score. He was posting big creative stats. So I got Ozil instead of Ramsey, and they were par. And it was stupid because Ramsey was still performing, and I mean, so was Ozil. But you know, I kind of predicted using, you know, the stats models that Ramsey was going to regress, and he never did until he obviously got injured. So I think in that season, I never actually brought Ramsey in. I brought Torre in, and I kept him for the rest of the season, I'm pretty sure, because it's not worth getting rid of Torre, because when he scores and you don't have him, your ranking's going to plummet. Anyway, so that's that segment. So that's the third segment, and that one is called Everyone Already Has This Player, Should You Bring Him In or Not? Awesome. So let's move on to the fourth segment. So the other polar opposite of the previous segment, no one has this guy, should you bring him in or not? So this is the differential concept. Now, I think most of you guys will know this, know these types of players as PODs. In FPL, like you'll find on all the different forums and mini communities concerning FPL, we call them differentials. I think POD sounds funny. It sounds like just really suspect. So let's call them differentials, because and it sounds more intelligent as well. Anyway, so this one's pretty straightforward. It's the exact opposite. I'll be looking at differentials, and differentials are players that, for me, my assessment will be that they're under 5% ownership. Yes, I know 5% probably it's going to be a big number when you're considering 3.5 million people will be playing, but that's what it is for me, under 5% ownership differential. These players are the players that are going under the radar slightly, and I believe have a really good chance of getting returns. I'll look at a whole bunch of players and just give a quick rundown on each player and why they should be considered. So there could be like, you know, 5-6 players that are under 5%, and if you want a really good differential to boost your ranking, and I think has a good chance of getting some returns, that really consider bringing these guys in. Cool, so let's move on. Fifth segment. So this one's pretty interesting. This one's called the Lemmings Player of the Round, the player that everyone jumped on board because he just did one big round. So this segment's going to look at the players that were brought in by the droves and have actually dropped off in performance. This one's going to be a bit tricky. I'll probably need, you know, some help from the other guys with this one, because you're going to have to look at these guys that the people are bringing in and like really assess their performance by the next probably 3 to 4 weeks. So I'm going to have to think of, you know, some kind of time frame to assess the failure, whether it be 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later, even 5 weeks later, after the droves have started getting him in. I'm not too sure. I probably won't start this feature until a little later in the season, maybe game week 3 or 4. So I can sort of really have a look at this time frame. So that's the fifth segment. So that's called the Lemmings Player of the Round, the player everyone jumped on board because he just did one big round. Cool. So let's go to the sixth segment. This one's called Who is Going to Keep a Clean Sheet This Week? There's nothing much more to elaborate on that one. I'll look at data. I'll look at shot numbers, shots conceded in the box, some regression analysis, general form, and the opponent for the week. And I'll make some informed predictions as to which teams, you know, I think are likely to keep those hard-earned clean sheets. Cool. All right, on to the last segment of the upcoming shows. This one's called Who is Going to Score Big This Weekend and No One Has Him? So another differential type segment, but this is more going to focus on the 1 week punt as a differential. So I'm just going to pick one player. He's going to be a left field pick, and we'll get to see how my differentials go, and I'll probably keep a tally of these differentials as well. Cool. So they are the seven segments that are going to that the show is going to comprise of. So I think that's a pretty good start. Seven's not too bad. They might shorten. They probably won't get any bigger. I think seven segments is good. Once, you know, if I get some guests on, we can discuss some of these things. And I think these seven segments will probably take up about half an hour of the pod, hopefully. I'm aiming for the podcast to only last about half an hour. You'll find a lot of, I know Fantasy Football Scout do their pod, and they use the Google Hangout now, and their pods usually last for about an hour, and I think that's too long. What their pods used to be half an hour, and I could sit down, put my headphones in, and concentrate on it, whereas now with the hour-long Google Hangout pods that last for roughly an hour. I tend to put it on in the background. I can't sort of sit there for that long listening to the fellas talk about, you know, fantasy stuff. I'm thinking half an hour is a good time frame for a fantasy pod. Okay, so as I promised at the beginning of the pod, I'll just give a quick rundown on the defensive rotation concept. So what they are, why they could be used, how they should be used, and a couple of I've got one decent example that I've come up with using a season ticker. Anyway, okay, so let's move on. So what is it? So the defensive rotation concept, it's a method of selecting cheap defenders so that you can rotate them, usually leaving one or two on the bench and playing the others in your rotation according to fixture difficulty. So you might have a Watford defender playing a Man United away, and then you might have a Stoke defender playing Norwich at home. So in this two-way rotation, you're going to play the Stoke defender because, you know, they have a better chance of getting the clean sheet. There are many combinations you can go with, obviously. You can go with a simple two-way rotation, whether you are rotating according to fixture difficulty or home and away. If you decide to go down a basic home and away type rotation, just be careful. Some teams tend to get more clean sheets away. I'm pretty sure, I haven't got the data and I haven't done enough research, I'm pretty sure West Brom got significantly more clean sheets away from home last season. Saying that, Brom's clean sheets that were away were two weaker teams, I'm also pretty sure. I do remember they got a clean sheet against Man United away later in the season, so it could be a mixture, I'm not sure. For me personally, I quite like putting in the time and finding good rotations according to fixture difficulty. And on top of that, in general, your defenders are more likely to get clean sheets against weaker teams at home. That's proven from the data from last season. For example, if you actually look at the top 10 teams home and away that provided clean sheets, 8 of the 10 weaker teams were at home. So if you look at, that's pretty hard to explain over a pod. So you've got Newcastle, who provided 11 clean sheets to other teams at their home. Burnley had 11, Hull had 11, Aston Villa had 10, Sunderland had 9. They were all at home. Then Sunderland away are up there, and they provided 8 clean sheets at their home for other teams' away fixtures. So yeah, I'm not too sure how else I could explain that. So yeah, but the message is that weaker teams provide more clean sheets at their opposition's home. Yeah, cool. All right, let's move on. So keeping with the two-way rotation concept, each team has a perfect home and away rotation with one other team. These rotations they correlate with geography, like where they're geographically placed. Like Newcastle rotate home and away perfectly with Sunderland, for example. I think for goalkeepers that's not a too bad little idea. But saying that, there are going to be weeks when if you've got a Newcastle Sunderland keeper rotation or like a little defender rotation, I'm not sure when, but at some stage there's going to be a time when like Sunderland plays Man United at home and then Newcastle plays Man City away or something like that. That means I don't think that is the case, but there will be something like that at some stage. So that's why I like putting in the effort to find those rotations according to fixture difficulty as opposed to home and away. And I'll get back to that. I'll have a quick look at that at a season ticker and find out. So anyway, so let's move on to some different types of rotations. You can look at three-way and four-way rotations, which can be fruitful, but is a bit riskier if you invest. For me, I'm thinking about going with a four-way rotation this season. That's what I'm thinking at the moment. I mean, there are tons of combinations here. So at this stage, my defence will look to have one heavy hitter, whether it be a Chelsea or Arsenal defender, and I will play them every week despite the fixture difficulty. In particular with someone like Chelsea, a team like Chelsea, they tend to shut up shop and park the bus in the more difficult fixtures. So I'll be inclined to play a Chelsea defender every game. Same with Arsenal, I think, with the Peter Cech signing. and they have good fixtures to begin with as well. If I get one of them, if I get an Arsenal defender instead, I'll probably play them every game week as well, despite the fixture difficulty. So I'll have one heavy hitter, then I'll have four defenders, sort of two mid-pricey defenders. At this stage, I'm looking at a defender from Stoke and probably a player from Leicester. I'm also interested in West Ham and Sunderland, and there are some really nice three-way and four-way rotations with those teams. A Stoke defender is nailed on for me, and Leicester. I like those two teams for both teams have good fixtures, and I think they are going to bring defensive returns. And then I look at some cheaper options, some options most likely from the promoted teams. I think in the rotations that I've looked at, Watford fit quite nicely. They have Everton away, and then they have West Brom at home, Southampton at home. Game Week 5, they have Swansea at home, and then Game Week 7, they have Crystal Palace at home. I don't mind those fixtures. I think they can get some defensive returns from those ones. Some other examples of some decent three-way rotations. We've got Bournemouth, West Ham, and Sunderland. So if I had something like that, I'd probably be looking to play two defenders for each week, and then I'll just have like a defender that costs four that I play on the bench every week. Actually, this is a really good one. It's Bournemouth, West Ham, and Sunderland. I don't mind this one because it's all up to from game weeks 1 to game week 8. You can play two defenders from this three-way rotation. So in game week 1, Bournemouth play Aston Villa at home, Sunderland play Leicester away, so you can play those two. From game week 2, West Ham have Leicester at home, Sunderland have Norwich at home. Yeah, I like them. This is awesome. Game week 3, West Ham have Bournemouth at home, Sunderland have Swansea at home, and then I'll keep going on. So all those fixtures up to game week 8, there is two favourable fixtures for two of those defenders. I really like that one for a three-way. And then I think in game week 8, if you trade your Bournemouth defender for a Newcastle defender, God forbid, those fixtures keep flowing quite nicely until game week 14. Anyway, so that's just one little scenario of a decent three-way rotation, just one, from game weeks 1 to 14 with one trade in game week 8 fits quite good. All right, some other three-way rotations I don't mind. I really like this one. I've got Stoke, Sunderland, Norwich. I like that one a lot as well. You play two defenders from that trio. The only cock-up is in game week 9 when Stoke play Swansea away, Sunderland play West Brom away, Norwich play Newcastle away. Swansea and Newcastle away are not very good fixtures. They're likely to concede in those ones. Last season, even though Newcastle were terrible, Newcastle away only provided 3 clean sheets. So if you play Newcastle at St James's, you're likely to concede. Swansea away, same, only 3 clean sheets. If you go down to Liberty, you're going to concede. And then what was the other one? Game week 9, West Brom. West Brom away. How hard was that fixture? 4. Yeah, so that's quite difficult as well. All right, so that's those 3. Stoke, Sunderland and Norwich. That's another rotation I don't mind. Moving on, what are some more that I like? Stoke, Sunderland, Leicester. Then I'll include the Watford defender, so of a four-way, Stoke, Leicester, Sunderland, and Watford. I can play two defenders for each game week up to game week 8, and there are no weak game weeks. And it's quite a cheap one because Stoke's going to give a 4.5, Leicester should give a 4.5 defender, Sunderland should give a 4.5 defender with their new signing. I can't remember his name. I think he's from Celtic. Matthews, Adam, something. He will get the right back berth, the right back position. He'll get some competition from Billy Jones, but he should be a 4.5 defender. And fingers crossed, we should get a 4.0 defender from Watford. So that's going to be a really cheap rotation, and I think we'll provide pretty. I think that there could be some good fruit in that. All right, another rotation I like, Stoke, West Ham, Sunderland. Yeah, that's pretty good. Only game week 1's a bit weak. You've got Stoke, who've got Liverpool at home. Stoke can get a clean sheet at against Liverpool. And then Sunderland have Leicester away, which can provide some fruit as well. Yeah, so Leicester actually provided 6 clean sheets away last season, so that's not too bad. Cool, so there's a few 3-way and 4-way rotations that I quite like. So that might give you some ideas on some ideas for the rotation. So let's move on to the next point. So really, are rotations, are they any good? Well, in theory they are. In practice, most people will say that they're not, and they're probably right. They're not really good. I mean, they've never worked for me. There's two reasons for that. The first one is there's always like an under. So before the season starts, you do all your work, you do all your research, you put all your data and you do all your statistical stuff. But there's always like an underpriced defender from a big hitter team, and the temptation will always be too great. You'll get this guy in, and then your rotation just goes out the window, and you just forget about it. For me, this season, I'm going to make a really, really good effort to ignore like the cheap defenders from the big hitter teams. Like, oh, who could be one? Like, Bellerin might come in, and he might be, you know, say, around 5.0 or something for Arsenal, and you might go, oh, I'm really tempted to get him in. So you just get him in, and you might get a Chelsea defender as well, and then that might leave you for a 3-way rotation. For me, I really want to go with a 4-way rotation. I really want to have a go. It's very risky, but I've got my wild card there. So most of the time, I mean, you get a good rotation, and then one of the players in your rotation either gets injured or they lose their place. And then pretty well your rotation's ruined and you have to waste a trade to fix it up. Or you just don't bother and you're stuck with like a defender with bad fixtures. So in my 4-way, just a bit of an example. So my 4-way, I've got Stoke, Leicester, Sunderland, Watford. So for game week 3, my Sunderland defender might get injured and then I'm stuck. Well, so that's not too bad because I'll just get the Stoke defender who plays Norwich away. So where's another example? Here we go. So game week 6... for my Stoke, Sunderland, Leicester, Watford rotation, the Stoke dude gets injured, and then I'm stuck either playing a Leicester defender at Stoke away or a Watford defender at Newcastle away. So that could be pretty bad. So anyway, they're probably the two primary reasons why people will shy away from defensive rotations. I mean, for me, it's an interesting prospect. I mean, I'm gonna probably do it. I'm gonna get one of these rotations, but it's probably gonna fail. But I don't care. I mean, it's just all fun. So, a good example, a bit of an anecdote from last year was that I had this really good rotation. I think Stoke was in it, and then Kyle Walker got injured from Tottenham. Now Spurs started last year were probably considered a borderline heavy hitter defense team because they just brought Pochettino in. And he was known to make defenses resolute. Obviously, it didn't work. They were pretty horrible. So anyway, Kyle Walker got injured, and Kyle Norton came in, and he was banged on for that right back position. He came in at 4.5, and I'm thinking beauty. So defensive rotations just went out. Just completely forgot about that. Brought Kyle Norton in about 10 minutes before deadline. He gets sent off. And then Tottenham lose the clean sheet. But if Kyle Norton did get sent off and he didn't get the penalty, Tottenham probably would have kept the clean sheet against West Ham. So that happened. So then I actually brought in Chester from Hull. Now, Chester from Hull fitted quite nicely with my other three defenders in a nice 4-way rotation. And then Chester proceeded to get sent off as well. So I had two defenders get sent off in the first 2 game weeks, and it was just all blew up in my face. And I probably should have played my wild card then, but I didn't. So is there any hidden messages in this? Not really. Probably just to have a go at doing the rotation. I mean, there's not really any messages. It's all pretty much luck, I think. I mean, the numbers change at the start of the season with these clubs. But as I said, I mean, there's no harm in doing this research. I mean, I think all the work you put into it is going to help you in the end. So anyway, I mean, that's all I've got for today. I mean, there wasn't a great deal of insight. I mean, the rotation discussion should be enlightening for some. There's lots of literature about the rotations. It's just up to you to go and find some stuff. There are a lot of articles out there about it, and it's a heap of fun using the season tickers and stuff, and finding those sort of good combinations. I will endeavour to broadcast and publish some team previews for some of those teams that I find interesting. I probably don't have time to do a team preview for every team, but there's a few teams that has some really interesting prospects in them, one being West Ham. I'll probably look at them. Arsenal's another one that I find interesting because it's such a minefield in the midfield. Hopefully I'll get onto that and publish those pods. All right, guys, that's it. I'm out. Hope you enjoyed it, and I'll be talking to you a bit later. Cool. See ya.